Hej og velkommen til endnu en episode. Jeg har fornøjelsen af at have Kirill med mig i dag, som er en ekspert i, hvad hedder det, i outsourcing. Men vi gør det her på engelsk, fordi Kirill forstår ikke ret meget dansk. Kirill, thank you for being here today. Kirill is founder and CEO of Mobile Unity, that are specialized in outsourcing and nearshoring here in Ukraine. But on top of that, Kirill is also an expert in his fears. So we can really, really have some, I have prepared some very good questions for him. So I think a lot of you out there are interesting to know if I should do outsourcing, nearshoring, etc., etc. But Kirill, could you please just make a short introduction about yourself and also about Mobile Unity, and then we will go over to what I think it's important, the questions.
Tak, Henrik, for the introduction. I'm Kirill. I'm the CEO and the founder of a company, Mobile Unity. We provision our clients with a fully dedicated to them development teams. This means that we hire the people for them. We organize the working environment for them, meaning that we take care of all the office things, infrastructural things, internet, kitchen, supplies, cleaning, everything. Of course, the workplaces, work desks, which are hardware and software, the licenses, everything essential for the work to be done. And we organize the HR, accounting, legal part of the work. However, our clients are still capable and are in charge of actually functionally managing their team that we provision them with. So our model is often called nearshoring. Sometimes it is outsourcing, sometimes it is outstaffing. But the bottom line is that we have the teams, we have an access to Ukrainian top development talent, and we are ready and willing to provision that to our partners all across the globe, of course. In a nutshell, this is what we do. The company itself now is approximately 200 people, and we work with 40 clients, approximately 40 clients from many countries, from DACH region, from Nordic regions of Europe, UK, North America, Israel, Japan, and so on and so forth.
Could you explain the process of, for example, when you outbound a new client, how you start, like recruiting, etc., etc.?
Typically, our clients come being not too sure if this model and our company is the best fit to them. They do not exist on a stage when they are ready to sign the contract, sit back and, like, you know, wait for the miracle to happen. They are still in active search, and our position on this matter, we want to give as much information as it's possible for the people, for our potential clients, to understand if we are really a good fit to them, if we can provision them the service that they are seeking for, or maybe we are not. And if it's the former case, of course, we would be happy to do business for years with this client. But if it's the least, if we are not that right fit, it is our mutual interest, our as a vendor and their as a client, not to step into these relationships. So first and the most important part, during the pre-sale stage, we are trying to put as much transparency over what will happen upon the contract signature to our potential client. Whatever may happen, we got to be telling that our clients, potential clients, so they understand it in full and they have no surprises in 1 month or 3 months or 6 months. When the potential client is ready to consider an option of working with us as a vendor, we usually provide an option to try the market, because down the road I can be as nice person as you wish, but you will not be working with me. I cannot, like, you know, code that well as my teams can do. I used to be a developer, but for a week maybe, and it wasn't the best experience, to be honest. So they got to know who they will be working for. And for this purpose, we are intentionally provisioning a proposal that we start sourcing the right candidates for our clients even before all the papers are signed. So the potential client may kind of touch the market, may feel how it goes with the particular candidates that we are capable of finding. They will understand the cost associated with the specific individual. They may have a conversation. They may interview the person. They may give a test assignment or like maybe online assignment to see how the person codes or solves some specific tasks. And based on all this complex vision towards a specific candidate, they can make a better, more educated decision on whether or not we are a right vendor for them and whether or not this particular candidate that our recruiting team found for them is also a match. Of course, it doesn't mean that this candidate, should one be selected, will accept the offer should we make them. But potentially, it is still like, you know, 50-50 or let's say 90% yes, 10% no. But it all depends on the project, complexity, technology stack, methodology being used by our client in regards to managing a project. Will it be agile? Will it be some form of agile? Will it be a chaotic way of management? Whatever it is. So all these factors influence the decision of the candidate whether or not to accept our offer to be working for Mobilunity and being fully devoted to functional tasks coming from the client of ours. Should this happen, should the offer be made and then accepted, then of course we are already kind of married, like we dated for a little bit, and this is the time to like actually exchange the rings and like, you know, commit for something towards each other. And this is the time when we sign the contract, we step into the stage of onboarding these people. We help our clients to set up everything essential from the process side to ensure that their remote development team will be as close by efficiency as their in-house local team would be.
You mentioned a little bit about agile, but my next question is, how do I control my team? Not like control, but do you use some kind of software, some platforms, any kind of like Scrum, Waterfall, Kanban or whatever to make it more efficient, mm-hmm. so you can actually see that my team is really, really progressing?
I understand the question. This is a good question and many clients of ours would be asking this. One important comment here. We ourselves as a vendor, we do not insist towards our clients what methodology, what systems to use. It is our intent to keep our clients' processes unchanged. Even if they start working with a remote team who sits like 2 or 3 hours away from their headquarters, if using a flight. So we, of course, we ask our potential client what existing process of collaborating with developers they have locally. And if we see this process is scalable to remote developers as well, such as, for example, our client in Copenhagen may be using Jira for organizing all the tasks and tracking all the time and things like that. Of course, this will be a perfect extension towards the Ukrainian team that will be working for them. If the client doesn't have any, or maybe they do not have a development team at all, and they are just starting this journey immediately with a remote team of ours, then of course we'll be advising such things, such tools, such processes, and we'll be explaining why exactly it is a good practice to use such way of organizing the work, why agile is a good methodology for something not fully defined, or why in particular task or like, you know, project assignment, it may be a good way to be sticking to waterfall, which is more used for like, you know, more defined projects from the very start. We will be advising, we will be consulting. This is part of our services and expertise. But again, the final decision needs to be always made by our client, because we do not want our client to get additional overhead just because they got the team somewhere near shore, somewhere in Kiev. We want the client to be having as less hassle as possible with the remote development team being plugged into their processes.
What is the best you can do when you have decided I want to build a team abroad? But me, if I come down and say I built my team, what is the best I can do for my team that I'm creating here, for example, in Ukraine?
Another good question, Henrik. I think if it was just one thing that I could mention, it is critically important that the client treats their remote development team exactly the same as they would treat their local team. I'll detail a little bit more here. So we, of course, it's different even from mentality perspective to imagine how can I treat equally the guys that I used to work for 3 years sitting in the same office, having like, I don't know, coffee together, knowing the names of the kids of my staff locally that I have, and somebody who I never met, who have weird names to me, lots of Sergeys, Andreys, Sashas, whoever, that, like, you know, the names that you probably don't face too much in Denmark. How can I treat them equally? But this is the point. If you are building a distributed development team, if you build an extension to your local team, unless you treat them equally like you would treat your local people, nothing will work out. Because the people somewhere there, not only they cannot see you on a daily basis, not only they cannot feel your vibes, your energy, your, like, you know, your mood, how the company does, they will not have any connection to the company except for like tasks coming to Jira or via email or like in Trello. And if this happens, we guarantee that within months, maybe years of work, these people will have no connection to you as a client. And they will be just like kind of freelancers. And this is the term that we never use towards our people. They are never freelancers. They cannot be treated as freelancers, because if they are treated as freelancers, you cannot expect loyalty. You cannot expect retention. If you cannot guarantee the retention of your remote people, then you only can put, like, you know, very short-term tasks, probably not too important, because you don't want to educate these people. You don't want to, like, you know, to know their names. They can be man one, man two, man three, whatever. That's it. But if you are building a remote development team for years, if you want these people to know you, to understand your corporate culture, to be ambassadors of your culture, you need to treat them exactly the same as you would do locally. And this is the main thing.
What is like the good things when you outsource, outstaff, etc.?
What gains the business, like, may get, right?
Yeah, the benefits of it.
People think that outsourcing means always like a better price. It is true, of course. If it was more expensive, for most of cases, people will not be coming, like, you know, even 2 hours away from their homes. But I think most of our listeners would think that the cost is the primary factor for outsourcing, or, like, you know, putting some of the manpower like nearshore. Indeed, it is not, especially for European countries who are located near shore to Ukraine. The trick is that with the way we provide this setup, it is way faster to scale the teams up and down. And I intentionally say, like, you know, the both directions, right? What it takes to hire a person in Copenhagen, in Stockholm, in Helsinki, in Zurich or Paris, we perfectly know all the limitations that are existent on all the local labor markets. We know there is always a shortage for IT talent. We know that all these countries, all the cities that I had mentioned, all these countries, they have a huge local demand for IT talent. Let's look at Ukraine for now. Ukraine doesn't have a huge demand locally. It is picking up. The startups appear. Some of the, like, you know, bigger organizations, enterprise level, of course, they are also willing to attract the best talent. But let's be honest, the majority of good software engineers are working for external markets, because Ukraine probably doesn't need that much for now. And this number is growing of these developers who are willing to contribute to some else countries, some else businesses and things like that. So what we provide is an ability to build the team very fast, to do the job needed, and then be capable of also shrinking the team down when it is needed. Just because we have a demand for these people on else projects, we will be capable of, like, you know, locating the best people that are on the team that at this stage for our client might be not needed. We'll find else project for them, just because there is a good demand for Ukrainian developers worldwide. So this is the main advantage of outstaffing, or putting the teams near shore. And of course the cost. Yeah, I mean, to most countries in Europe, if we consider the cost of ownership, not cost of the salaries alone, cost of ownership with office, with the overheads, with HR, accounting, desks, taxes, everything, the cost of ownership in Ukraine is still significantly lower. And this is something that also gives additional advantages to our potential clients and to our clients.
There's also, you mentioned a lot of good things, but there's also things that you should watch out for before you, for example, decide to outsource. Because in general, there is not always, but there is always some that have a bad experience.
Lots of bad experiences, to be honest. And I believe this is often due to the reason of people not being prepared to what outsourcing or nearshoring is all about. It is never an easy path. I mean, I always tell our potential clients, if you can hire the people locally, don't ever think about doing this remotely. This is more complex. It will take more of your manager's time. Guaranteed. It will have communication gaps. For sure, even if they speak same language, same French language, same Danish language, which is hard to find in Ukraine, but still, even if it was the same language, the distance makes the impact. And it only works if the company considers all pros and cons and understands, okay, locally, we'll be competing with giants. We'll be competing with banks. We'll be competing with the companies who don't really limit themselves in budgeting, right? They can throw the money on people just to get the best that they can. Nobody wants to get worst on the market. Everyone wants to have the best developers. Where can I get the best developers? Probably somewhere else in Ukraine. Okay, let it be Ukraine. It doesn't mean that outsourcing simplifies the life of a business. In most cases, it makes things more complex on a setup stage when the business needs to invest time of their managers, maybe sometimes to fly over and spend time with the team because the team needs that. Maybe to be solving some of the things more formally. In office in Copenhagen, you could go for a coffee and have one-to-one with the person that you want to talk about, and the problem is solved. With a remote person, you cannot go for a coffee. You need to schedule a meeting or call immediately and spend these 15 minutes or 30 minutes talking about these particular things. So the worst thing, I think, for the business with outsourcing / nearshoring is the essence of good time investments that are essential here. Without that, it will be a bad experience, always, guaranteed.
Yeah. Next question is, because you mentioned HR a lot. You have a HR team, but the company you're doing business with also have a HR team. Do they work together? And also, there's a couple of questions in the same questions. But also, what do you HR team here do to keep the the staff happy? And also, I saw that you have won some prizes in HR. Why that?
Good. So I'll try to go one by one.
Yeah. If you don't remember.
Yeah. Thank you. So overall, what we're doing here, and this is part of our package, of our offering, it is our intent and purpose to maintain the corporate culture of our client and to broadcast it to their team here. We become the client's eyes and hands in regards to what they want to be doing with the team. And on this matter, like I said, we come over to our clients and we ask, what is that working for a company of yours? What is exactly it means for the employees? How they should be feeling working for you guys? What is important and what is less important? What goals you have for maybe for next month, for 6 months, for a year? What kind of people should these be so they really fit and they do not become something that, really doesn't fit into your whole organization? Knowing all that, our HR team, our resource managers are working on more or less day-to-day basis with the team, propagating all these values. Of course, we not only do it for the client, we also must do it as an organization ourselves. I often bring the analogy of like the parents. The kid usually has like two parents, right? It doesn't mean one should love his mother or his father more than the opposite, right? There are two parents, and on this particular model, there are two companies that put an influence over a person. And the person needs to understand that whatever happens here in Ukraine is, of course, it's our realm. We make sure that the person is protected, the person is guaranteed the social things that are part of his or her contract, the person is comfortable being at their workplace, they feel that the people around are same-minded, same way educated, same way intelligent. This is something that we handle. But also we handle the client's HR part, which is where we go, what we should be doing, how we work, what kind of processes are very important to us, how we treat each other within the client's organization. And this is how it works on a more or less day-to-day basis. So this is how HR process is organized here, always from a perspective of client wishes on how things should be working.
Yeah. In Denmark, we have one culture. In Ukraine, you have another culture. In other countries, so how do you cope with this sometimes culture difference? Because as I see it, if you can manage that, you are like an expert on culture. But I don't think it's always like that in reality.
You are right. I wish I could say that, like, you know, we could plug in any culture. But the thing is that Ukrainians are a very proud nation, and Ukrainians are proud of their cultural specifics as well. And if it was something like, you know, clashing with the else culture, so to say, I think we would be, of course, in trouble. The thing is that I think, and based on our experience and the way it goes, with every foreign client, and it's important to mention, we don't work with Ukrainian companies. We only have foreign clients. We have 40 foreign clients. Every foreign client has their own culture that is, from many aspects, it is interesting. It is interesting enough for the candidates, for developers to explore, not essentially becoming full part of it, just because too many it takes well, life to grasp the knowledge of a culture, right? But of course, the business ethics makes the mature people understand that we are not supposed to be equal. We are not supposed to be totally similar from views of like to different things. What is important from a professional point of view, that the developers, the software engineers, they understand what is important to the client and what things are the most important to them. The rest may probably be like, you know, somehow smooth. So seeing it from our perspective, we ask the question, we provoke the client to be telling us as an organization, what is missing? Mm-hmm. What gaps exist? What do you think could be improved in every particular team member? So the client feels less gaps with their corporate culture or their, like, you know, country culture, so to say. We ask these questions. Should we get the answers? Of course, there will be an action then. We always see the people working, and they, even before they accept an offer, they want to know where the client is from. French, perfect. Israeli, awesome. Turkish, perfect. Any place is attractive from like, you know, from interesting points of view, right? And the team working on every particular project, they, in 100% of cases, they want to know more how it is working on the client side. What's common and what is not common? Is it normal that we make jokes to each other? Are these supposed to be good jokes or, like, you know, maybe a little bit of like black humor or whatever? So all these points are all solvable, of course. Do not expect Ukraine to understand everyone, but please be sure that Ukrainians are very, very welcoming nation. They want to know more. Not essentially they will be fully supporting every point, but they will be respecting that. And of course, they will be learning that. And I think this is the best part about, like, you know, nearshoring to Ukraine.
On top of that, I know a couple of years ago, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, it was very popular for Ukrainian software developer to relocate. How do you see that now compared to 5-10 years ago?
The trend, I would say, doesn't exist. So there are always people who are like, you know, they are willing to explore the options. If I was 23 probably and like, you know, having less roots here, I would probably be willing to go to some European country for 2, 3, 4 years just to try myself on different culture, to explore that, to get this in. There are people like that still. There are people who are seeking for maybe for else lifestyle, for else cultural things. They are seeking for else a different future to, let's say, their families. They see opportunities to their spouses or maybe to their kids and so on and so on. There is no trend like this, that the Ukrainians are all moving abroad. No, it wasn't like you said, 5 years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago, when we had lots of political things happening here, it was a big thing. And yeah, Ukrainian labor market lost, I think, like some 10% of people just because the people were so massively going to Western Europe, to North America and things like that. Right now, the percentage is quite low. Ukrainians may be open to relocation, but they are very much certain about pros and cons of such move. Should this relocation happen to Western European country, that most likely will be associated with the language concerns, because if it's not UK, obviously you can still live just with English in Denmark, but if you move to Denmark, you probably want to learn Danish. That's normal and all, like, I'll be doing it myself. So there are good reasons for people to do this, but also there are very good reasons to stay here in Ukraine. And among them, that's of course, like, you know, the families, the all the, like, you know, the circles of communication of Ukrainians. Secondly, we quite well know the differences in mentality that may be not as important when you work, and like, you know, this can be like, you know, smooth. But when you leave, it's like an additional layer of something that you really need to move to else country to be doing that. And this is how I think the majority of IT talent in Ukraine thinks. That's why they're staying here. It's a good place to work because they work with Danish, American, British, Finnish, whatever businesses. They are on the very edge of technology. Still, they remain within comfortable circle of people. They can speak Ukrainian or Russian or any else language they prefer. So yeah, lots of advantages for both options.
My last questions. What is the best advice you actually can give to a company who is considering going in this direction?
I think avoid saying no before you actually explore the option, right? We often communicate with businesses who are maybe not flexible enough, maybe frightened, with good reasons for that. They do not really know what it is like to work with a remote development team who are placed in else country. Or they heard these stories from someone else. They may not know the details of all these collaborations and things like that. Our model, and I'm pretty sure lots of our competitors on the market, we want the clients to explore what it is like before they actually commit to something. Give it a try. Have a conversation with 3 or 5 companies. Understand what it's all about. Try to learn a little bit. Like, of course, it takes time to explore how it is to work with a remote development team placed somewhere in Kyiv. Come over to Kyiv. Let me know. I'll meet you in the airport. I'll show you lots of things. And if you don't want to work with our company, that's still fine. I mean, like, you know, just give it a try. Take a little bit of time to explore the opportunity, and then you'll be knowing way more. You will know, I don't like the language. I don't like mentality. For sure. I don't like, I don't know, the cost maybe. And then you'll have a reason not to step into that. But if you don't have a reason, Why limiting yourself to local market only? Your competitors most likely are thinking how to overbid you. And I think more options the business has by running the operations gives it an additional advantage. I would recommend to explore this opportunity of getting additional advantage. Not really stepping into that, just an explore.
Спасибо, спасибо огромное.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you a lot.
Tak, Henrik.
Ja, tusind tak.
Ja.
Jeg håber, at nogle af de svar, Kirill har givet, kan være med til at sætte nogle af jeres tvivl væk fra, at outsourcing, outstaffing kan faktisk være benefit for jeres virksomhed. Skulle I have yderligere spørgsmål, så tag fat i os, fordi vi vil gerne hjælpe, så I alle sammen kan få en rigtig, rigtig god succes ud af outsourcing, hvis det er den vej, I vælger at få. Så tusind tak for os.